The assessment of the Lord is beyond the perception of the material senses of the living entities because of the aforementioned primordial nature. But He is the controller for everyone, including me. So this is a discussion between Narada Muni and his father, Bodhi Gautama. And Narada Muni, of course, was observing the activities of Lord Brahma, and he saw that he is controlling everything, and everything depends on him. And so he was asking, "Are you the Supreme Lord?" And then Lord Brahma was very happy to clarify that for him, that he is not the Supreme Lord, but there is another personality, for he is beyond him and above him, and whom he himself worships. And so, of course, these discussions are there in Srimad Bhagavatam to clarify one simple point, which is Krishna Subhadavasana, that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, not Brahma, not Shiva, not any other demigod, and not even Narayana, not even Mahavishnu. So Srimad Bhagavatam is fully dedicated to this single point only. And so this part of Srimad Bhagavatam also discusses that through the mouth of Lord Brahma, who is, you can say, the Lord and the Master of the whole universe. But there is Master above Him, Master of all the universes, who is Lord Shiva, and there is Master above Lord Shiva also, Master of not only all the universes in the material world, but also the entire spiritual world also, and that is Vishnu. And there is one personality even about Vishnu, and that is Vishnu. So, and this is a complete understanding which is not available anywhere else besides Bhakti tradition. They cannot speak. So, is there so, and this statement is very important for us to understand that who is the Supreme Lord? That He is not seen by the senses. He cannot be perceived in this material world. That Brahma can be perceived by those who live in the material world. Of course, not everybody. Like ourselves, we can't even see Lord Brahma. We can't even see our hand if it is dark, if there is no light. So what to speak of Lord Brahma and others that were in a very, abilities are very limited. But many personalities in this material universe, they can see Lord Brahma. But Brahma said that the one who is above all the Supreme Lord actually cannot be seen by anyone in this world, the Supreme Lord. And he's beyond the perception of the material senses. And Sanskrit word which is used in this verse is adokshaja. That adokshaja, of course, Aksha means eyes or seeing. So Akshaja, one who can be seen by the eyes. And the Supreme Lord is Adha Akshaja. Adha means beyond the ability of the eyes to see, and of course all the other senses to perceive. That is the Supreme Lord. And so this is actually a very common point which is brought up by Normally what is by atheistic people who believe that only what they can see exists and what they cannot see does not exist. So according to their calculation, air also does not exist, because how can you see the air and what to speak of either? Okay, so, but oftentimes they challenge devotees, if God is there, then show me the God, I want to see God. And Prabhupada was challenged in this way. There is another challenge that we follow Srila Prabhupada, and we say that the purpose of human life is to see the Supreme Lord face to face. And many people ask, and Prabhupada would also ask, have you seen yourself the Supreme Lord face to face before telling us to do so? And Srila Prabhupada was very clearly answering that question. In one instance he said, not only I have seen the Supreme Lord face to face, but I can see him even now as clear as I can see you. But yes. After that there were no questions asked. But of course, we are also facing oftentimes same challenge that people may ask us. Have you seen the Lord? And I heard interesting answers by different devotees, senior devotees in wisdom. One of our spiritual masters, he was challenged in this way. And he said, yes, I can see the Supreme Lord right now. And I can show you the Lord also. And he pointed outside of the window, and there was a sun in the sky. And he told that young man, you see the sun? In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, I am the sun. You know, the sun is representing me in this world. And so the only difference between you and me is that I recognize that this is the Supreme Lord, but you don't. Because as Prabhupada quotes from Bhagavad Gita, 7:25, and he refers to those verses, and Krishna says, Naham prakasya sarvasya yoga maya samavritaha. He says, Na means not, aham means I, prakasya. Prakasya means manifest, and sarvasya to all. So he says, you know, I'm not manifest to everyone. Why? Yoga maya samavritaha. Because I'm covered by the yoga maya. So we can see that Krishna himself in person was manifesting himself 5,000 years back, and not everyone, you know, they were looking at Krishna, but they were not seeing, they were not understanding that this is the Supreme Lord. Because they were saying all over the same as us. So one head, two hands, two legs, and of course, you know, we can see even in Bhagavad Gita that Arjuna could not recognize Krishna immediately as the Supreme Lord. It is very interesting, by the way. If you read Bhagavad Gita carefully, in chapter 4, Krishna tells Arjuna very clearly that I am the Supreme Lord, right? He says, Ajokisan Abhyayatma Budhanushara Abhisan Prakriti Sama Abhisaya Sambhavyatma Maya. So he says that I am unborn, indestructible, and I am the Lord of all living entities, etc., etc. So he was explaining about himself very clearly in the fourth chapter. And you can imagine, right, that Arjuna, apparently he was perceiving Krishna as his friend, and then, just imagine your circumstances. you're talking to someone who is your friend, right? Just to be in Arjuna's shoes. And that friend of yours says, by the way, you know who am I? I'm the Supreme Lord, I'm unborn, I'm indestructible, everything is under my control, I have the supreme powers. And you just say, you just don't take any notice at all of that statement, you know. And just carry on your conversation. Okay, that's good, but you know, how much of the vegetables in the market? At least you would take a notice. Is it really? That's interesting. Could you please tell me a little more about it, right? But Arjuna hasn't taken any notice, zero notice of that point in chapter 4. He just carried on the conversation as if nothing happened, as if Krishna didn't say anything. And of course, this is not that, because Arjuna was so oblivious to what Krishna was saying, but because Arjuna was in a very special position himself. You know, this is the glory of Krishna's devotees, that Krishna's devotees are extremely powerful personalities. That first of all, Arjuna was the son of Indra, who is the lord of the heavenly planets, right? And secondly, you know, he was associating with many gods, and he was even fighting with some, he was fighting with the Lord Shiva, who is the supreme lord of the entire material creation. There is no one more powerful than Lord Shiva in the entire material creation. And Arjuna was fighting with him, and he nearly defeated him. Like that. And so Arjuna's position is very, you know, special if you think about it. He's the son of God, he was, you know, associating with many gods, he was fighting with, you know, the most powerful god in the whole material world. And so, you know, when Krishna declared, oh, I am God, Arjuna thought, okay, another one. You know, there are so many gods, that's fine. And of course, you know, and mostly associated with God anyhow, so it's not so important. But my situation is more important. I want to discuss that. So, but Arjuna hasn't really understood in full to what extent Krishna is God. And that extent he realizes in chapter 11, when Krishna actually displays his universal form to Arjuna. And then Arjuna becomes so impressed and even scared of that vision. So we can understand that this is also, you know, example of what's happening in this world normally. Of course, Arjuna is not one of the conditioned souls, but he plays that part to show us the example. And so, you know, people think, oh, if somebody looks like me, he cannot be God. But if someone has, you know, like four or more hands and a few more heads on the shoulder, etc., so that person must be God. Like that. But Krishna manifested himself in apparently human form. Right? And so only those who have love for Krishna, only they could, you know, understand that this is the supreme world. Interesting that in this material world there is also a certain pattern that people follow, and yeah, it manifests across the whole creation. That, for example, you know, poor people, they're trying to appear to be rich, right? By any means, they, you know, dress themselves very nicely, and if they have shortage of money, you know, with the last money, they want to buy very, you know, like a flashy car to show themselves, as, you know, etc. But we can see very interesting fashion nowadays that rich people, they want to appear poor. And they wear, you know, torn clothing, etc. So this becomes like fashion. So, you know, rich people, they like to play part of poor people. And poor people want to play the part of rich people. So this is how it's happening in material world? Of course, because no one is actually satisfied with whatever they have, because there is no happiness in the material world, no matter what you do. They can't find it. But also amongst professionals, you can see that, say, I have studied and practiced mediation, conflict resolution, so there are certain rules, you can say certain sadhana you have to follow if you want to, you know, properly accomplish the process. And one of the most important parts of sadhana is that you listen very carefully to what people say and never interrupt them. So, you know, in order to be accomplished mediator or resolver or ombudsman, which is at a higher level, you have to become really, really good listener. Extremely good at listening and understanding what people are saying. And you cannot interrupt them. This is the rule. And then the man who actually introduced that system within our society, he's a Harvard professor in the field, and he's almost a person on a very high level. He's a very elderly man also. He's like over 70 years old. And he has such an amazing mediation skills that he's hired by the big corporates, you know, for example, to resolve conflicts between, you know, company and trade union, because, you know, trade union makes everyone, you know, go on strike, and company is losing, you know, awful amount of money because they cannot do anything, and so they want to resolve that as quick as possible. And they invite him for this kind of, in these circumstances, and they pay him, you know, serious money, something like $10,000 per hour of his work. And this is how much he costs, his, you know, his work costs. And the one who is dealing with him, he shared that, you know, he has an amazing technique of resolving the conflicts. Because, you know, he's hired because he can resolve, you know, conflict, any conflict in a very short time. You know, this is like his guarantee that he can do, you know, within a few hours he can resolve conflict of any depth. And the way he does that, you know, that he doesn't listen to no one. You know, people come together and they, you know, like, quarrel and argue with each other, and he's supposed to listen to everyone and see, you know, what these people are saying and what that people are saying, and how they can find common language. He doesn't listen to no one, and he just shouts at everybody, and sometimes he is using foul language. And, you know, if you hear someone using, you know, foul language, who's a professor of Harvard University, who's like over 70 years old and supposed to belong to the highest rank in the human society, you know, even workers become silent, and because of, they become shocked. They never expect that. You know, and then he's using the pose to tell what he has to say, and he's offering them the best solution which they accept immediately on the spot. And this is how he resolved the whole thing. So, you know, and of course this is like a very good example, but it is said also that, you know, in Krishna consciousness, unless and until one achieves perfection, one has to follow the rules, right? For example, the main rule in worshipping the Supreme Lord is respect, yeah, that, and service, that you show your respect to the Supreme Lord in different ways, and you serve the Supreme Lord in different ways, unless and until you achieve perfection. But once one on the perfected level, he doesn't have to follow those rules anymore. Like you can see, coward boys in Vrindavan, they climb on Krishna's shoulder. Can we even imagine ourselves to climb on the deity? Like that, or wrestle with the deity, or do something like that. And then they tell Krishna, you have to do this and that. They order Krishna, or they restrict Krishna, or like Mother Yashoda, she is binding the Supreme Lord, and you know, punishing the Supreme Lord. So this is something beyond any rules and regulations you can understand, and oftentimes goes opposite of the rules and regulations. And because there is pure love in that exchange, so when someone achieves that level of perfection, he doesn't have to follow any rules anymore. But of course, it's not to be imitated, because Srila Prabhupada is warning against imitations, that if someone tries to imitate the high level in the immature state, one immediately becomes good. And we can see that the Supreme Lord is also the same, that you know, there is a human form of a very low level, which is earthly human form with a one head, two arms, and two legs, all was supposed to be. But you know, you can see that higher human form, like Lord Brahma, four heads, and there are other Brahmas who have even more heads than that, and some demigods have many arms, like that, many arms, many heads, etc., because they have a lot of work to do, right? But and even in the spiritual world you can see that, you know, all these Vishnu forms, they have four arms, but when it comes to the supreme of all the forms, who is Krishna, he looks like a human. Rather, human beings look like him. But you know, this is interesting, because he doesn't have to impress anyone, and he has only two hands, just because he has nothing to do besides enjoying himself. He has no work to do. All the work is done by his different expansions and manifestations, etc. So everything is running on remote control. And with that, it never fails, because he has so many expansions and so many servants who are doing work on his behalf. And the only thing he does is enjoying with his devotees. And because people in this world, well, they don't see the Supreme Lord, they cannot see the Supreme Lord face to face, they conclude that he must be a person. And also they think that because I have a form, and because I am imperfect, that's the logic of a person. Then the Supreme Lord, because he is perfect, he is supposed to have no form. But Srila Prabhupada's argument, which is a very traditional argument brought by our parampara, is very simple. If you are created by the Supreme Lord, and Supreme Lord is the origin of everything, so if you have form, how come that Supreme Lord doesn't have a form? How come that origin is lacking something you have? Right? How, say, the bank can give you the loan rather than all the money in their bank? Is it possible? Of course not. So it is not possible that the origin is lacking something which is existing in a prototype. So this is very simple, a very powerful argument, which absolutely cannot be defeated by any impersonalist form of life. Actually, this was one of the strongest arguments Ramanujacharya brought forward, and this is how he defeated Mayavadism in his time. That he brought a 21 argument against the Mayavadi statements, and of course, one of their statements is that, you know, whatever is in this world is all mirage or illusion. All the forms in this world are illusory. And Ramanujacharya said, okay, so if you use that form, if you use that analogy on the mirage, you know, that you can see the mirage of the water in a desert, some lake, and then when you come close, there is something. So, but why mirage is existing? For the very simple reason that it's a reflection of the real water which exists somewhere else. Okay, our forms are temporary, and in this sense you can say they are illusory, even though even that is a fallible argument, that temporary and illusory are not exactly the same thing. So, but even if we accept that point, that our forms are temporary and therefore they are illusory, then how come that these forms are existing? What do they reflect? And so naturally they reflect the original form, which is the form of the Supreme Lord. And so he has that form, and of course, what is the reason people want to follow impersonal conclusions in their lives? Prabhupada explained very clearly, because of the frustration. Because Bhaktivinoda Thakur actually elaborates on that point in one of his books, Bhakya Loka. He says, impersonalists, and Mayavadis of course, or like all of the impersonalists, are envious of Krishna. And they think that the Supreme Lord has acquired his supremacy. They don't believe that he was always the supreme. They think that he acquired his supremacy through the power of Yama. And therefore he's controlling everything and everyone. And of course, including those impersonalists. And of course, no one wants to be controlled in this world. Everyone wants to control. And they think, if I will acquire the jnana, the divine jnana by which the Supreme Lord is controlled to everyone, I can escape the Lord's control. And this is what they say about, you know, this is what it means to merge into the Brahmacharya, escape the Lord's control. But then there are some who are even more ambitious than they, and these are actually my body. They think, I will acquire exactly the same knowledge what the Supreme Lord has, and then by the power of that knowledge, I will attain this position. Like that, I will become the Supreme Lord. Which is, of course, very clearly envy, because they envy the Supreme Lord. They envy his position, and therefore they want to develop knowledge for the sake of acquiring his position. And of course, the Lord actually doesn't mind that we may think, and actually this is a real argument which was posed by one person. The argument was very interesting, that if the Supreme Lord is fulfilling everybody's desires, and we want to be gods, right? We want to become God, we want to become supreme. Why the Supreme Lord cannot fulfill that desire? Why he cannot make me into the supreme? What's the difficulty? And what is the answer to that question? He can easily, and he is actually ready to do so. Like in the description of the main opulences of the Supreme Lord. The supreme opulence is his renunciation by Vairagya. That means he is not even attached to the idea of being the supreme. And in Vrindavan, it's very easily can be perceived. You know, he doesn't care about being the supreme. He enjoys being the vessel of his devotees. And so he can easily give away his supremacy to anyone who wants that. But the difficulty is that no one can handle it besides him. Because there is no one more qualified than him. And never will be more qualified than him. You know, you can see that description in Krishna book when one guy, let's see, what was his name? Paundraka, King Paundraka. He, you know, came up with that idea that he is Vasudeva. And, you know, Krishna is claiming his position. And then what he did, he picks himself, you know, two extra artificial arms, and within, you know, he placed four Vishnu symbols in these arms, and with this he challenged Krishna to fight. And he was saying, Krishna, you are, you know, falsely claiming yourself to be Vasudeva. I am real Vasudeva, so you should give up your divine attributes, which are Shankar Chakravarti Padma, in my favor. And what Krishna said, well, in effect, was no problem. I'll certainly give up my attributes in your favor, and I can start with my Sudarshan Chakra, and, you know, here you go, catch it. What happened? You couldn't catch it. So, Pandraka was trying his best, but, you know, Sudarshan Chakra was too powerful for him to hold, so he lost two arms, and these were actually, you know, his real arms. So he was left with two artificial arms, two prosthetics, like that. So, and he died, Sudarshan Chakra cut him, and he died, this was fatal cut. But nevertheless, Krishna was so merciful that he fulfilled his desire. In the spiritual world, he attained the form, four-armed form, which is no different from the world, because he was so keen on having that form. So Krishna said, sure, have it. So Krishna is so kind. He can fulfill anyone's desire. Even if someone wants to hold his supreme position, he is ready to give. But how much person can hold with his two little arms? You know, that's too heavy. Too heavy responsibility. So this responsibility crushes everyone, and therefore, you know, Krishna has to carry this responsibility, even though he is not really interested in it. He does that out of duty. He explains that in Bhagavad Gita. It's not something I am interested in, but I do it out of duty. And we can see, however, that Krishna is fulfilling our desires. In the material world, if you want to be God, Krishna gives all the facilities for that. That this is first stop after we leave the spiritual world. When we arrive in the material world, Krishna is providing us with a full universe, and he makes us into Lord Brahma. And so we can be God in the whole universe. And this is the maximum capacity jiva can handle. Can play the role of God on the scale of one universe. So we all have been there, done that. So, but we couldn't handle it. That's why we are here in Singapore now. And if we blow it again, this time, you know, Singapore is not the last stop in this material world. I can absolutely assure you, there are much worse places that one can born in Arctic as a penguin or something. It's much worse. You can understand. So that's why, you know, Krishna is completely neutral and he can give whatever we want. And it's only a question of our purification, how much we can handle. And Krishna is fulfilling everyone's desires. And this is the real reason why he is here in this material world. That if you look in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is talking so much about the different opulences. And sometimes when we wonder why Krishna is speaking so much about himself, I am this, I am that, I am the power of the strong, I am the life of all the living, etc., etc. And you may wonder, is he bragging or something? Actually, I had one experience, very interesting experience, when I just started reading Bhagavad Gita. And I was very impressed because I was reading these scriptures and trying to understand what Krishna consciousness is. And, I was trying to understand, who am I and, what is the purpose of my life, etc., etc. And I couldn't find any, complete answers in no scripture. No scripture ever gives any complete answers. Bible, Quran, all these scriptures. They don't give clear picture. But when I came across Bhagavad Gita, I was so, surprised, because Bhagavad Gita explains it black and white, so clearly. And so I always carried Bhagavad Gita with me, and I was reading Bhagavad Gita, and I was telling everyone about Bhagavad Gita, and showing Bhagavad Gita to others. And one of my friends, who was the son of a minister, and of course, born with a silver spoon in his mouth, and having so much money, and excellent education, and very aristocratic manners, and very refined speech, and he was very he was impressing everyone, all the youth. He was a teenager as well, because he was so versed in all the philosophies, etc. And everyone was impressed with his high qualities and knowledge and everything else. And so I decided to show Bhagavad Gita to him. And I was convinced that he's supposed to know Bhagavad Gita, but I was very surprised because he said he never came across this book in his life. And he took this book, he was very impressed by the fact that this scripture was written more than 5,000 years ago. And he just opened Bhagavad Gita randomly. And he was very soft spoken and had really refined manners. And this was the most impressive thing about him. And so he's reading Bhagavad Gita, and the part where Krishna is speaking about his opulences, of the mountains and the Himalaya, all the human beings and the king, etc., etc. And he's reading. And he is asking me, who is that Krishna? I said, well, according to Bhagavad Gita, he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And it was very amazing. He started actually shouting, and he became very angry and annoyed. And he said, if this is the Supreme Lord, he should be more humble. Why he is bragging in this book so much? I am this and that. I don't believe that Krishna, Krishna is God. And he threw Bhagavad Gita on the side like that. He was really angry. And not only me, but other boys who saw that display, that he actually lost it, lost his school altogether. And they were thinking, my God, what happened to you? A complete transformation. And actually many of them were only respectful, because they saw that it was so artificial. But then, you know, later I realized that, you know, he was so cool and so well mannered because he saw no match with himself like that, and so he felt himself really superior. But then he came across someone who was obviously more superior than him, so he was his school. So, and Prabhupada actually explained that this is what preaching of Krishna consciousness does. You know, it separates real from false. And he is giving that analogy of lemon juice squeezed into the milk, because milk is immediately separated into whey and curd. So in the same way, he said, you know, you have like Krishna consciousness in human society, immediately you can see who is divine personality and who is the boy. You know, because divine personalities will appreciate Krishna, demonic personalities, you know, will hate Krishna. Of course, in Kali Yuga it's all very much mixed, that people may have demonic tendencies, but under the influence of Krishna consciousness, even demons can become divine personalities. Like, we know many examples how oftentimes relatives of devotees get fight against Krishna and Krishna consciousness very vigorously, and after some time they become devotees themselves. There are so many cases. So under the influence of Krishna consciousness, all the demonic prevents this, you know, disappearing in the same way as under the influence of the sun, all the, you know, guilt is disappearing. So Prabhupada says that Krishna is not only pure, but he is antiseptic. He's a purifying agent for everything in everyone. And therefore, impersonal approach is not the solution, because people, they want to merge in God or want to become God to fulfill all their desires. Eventually this is what they want. But because there is no happiness in this world as such, they become frustrated at the end, and they still come back to the same, to the square one again, like Srila Prabhupada says about Mayavadi sannyasis. You know, for them to be involved with the material world would be considered to be a fall down. And after some time they come to do some charitable activities. Why? Because you need service, you need love, you need personal relationships to enjoy. And if there is no service, if there is no love, at least on some level, you cannot enjoy. And so we can understand this is what Krishna consciousness gives. It gives us real love, the topmost love, love of Krishna, and topmost service, serving Krishna. And therefore, Krishna consciousness is considered to be the topmost, because it's personal relationship with Krishna. And it's not something which has to be proved theoretically. Like my Guru Maharaj says that the proof of the effectiveness of Krishna consciousness is every single devotee who is practicing. Because our experience in Krishna consciousness of relationships with Krishna, this is the best proof of the reality of this process. And therefore, no materialistic person can ever understand devotee. Because it's personal, it's between devotee and Krishna. And Krishna is so kind that he is appearing for his devotee in a form. In the beginning he appears in the form of a deity. And then immediately we start developing our personal relationships with Krishna in his deity form. And anyone who is seriously worshipping the deity can tell so many stories about development of those relationships.
like my Guru Maharaj was very kind to me, and he gave me Sharadam and a Govardhan Shiva to worship a few years back. And I have so many stories, very amazing stories connected to this Govardhan Shiva, that, you know, my current condition, for example, is that, you know, superficially I'm traveling throughout so many countries and you know, all over the world, four continents, but, you know, my condition is that I'm not doing that. That this Govardhan Shiva is doing that. I'm just a carrier. And he has his own plans, and he has his own mission, and he's developing relationships with different people, etc., etc. Because this is Krishna, and I have so many amazing stories that some people said you could easily write a book just about your Lord and Shiva, full of amazing stories. If you like, I could share it, one of the stories. Yeah. So one time we went with one devotee to Italy, because this devotee was running running this restaurant in his place, and he wanted to learn, you know, how other restaurants are operating, menus and everything else. So we were going around different parts of Italy, seeing different restaurants, devotee restaurants, and some other vegetarian restaurants also. And so we were in a very remote part, and we were coming back to ashram, but it was too far. We were using rented car, and it was already about around midnight, and there was no chance for us to reach the destination. So we decided to stay over in a motel on the way. And that devotee, he tried one motel, it was full, second one was also full, but Italians are, you know, very hospitable, people, and they always want to help others. And that Italian man who was running that motel, he said, you know, rather than you looking for the place randomly, let me make a few phone calls to my friends and see if they have any rooms available, so I could, you know, direct you to that motel and book the room on the phone for you. And so he did that. He found one spare room and one motel, and so he said, you go there. And when we went there, we already knew that there is a room waiting for us. And it was about 12 o'clock, I was finished, I was sleeping in the car, and he was driving. And so he went to the reception, he took the key, and he gave me the key. He said, you can go and take rest, I'll park the car and go in. So, and when I looked at the key, I saw it has number 108. And I was thinking, because I slept the whole way, I didn't know about those arrangements. And I thought, you know, he purposefully, because I had door done with me, he purposefully booked room 108 for Giriraj. Because, you know, 108 is very spiritual and very auspicious number for us. And so in the morning I was asking him, did he book that room purposefully? He said this was the only room affected. So, and the whole water. And we were laughing, we were saying, okay, you did that, what I said. And, and somewhere behind, in the back of our minds, we were thinking, oh, maybe it's just a coincidence or something. But then next day, we were supposed to fly out, and we had very early flight, and we were going to Ukraine. And the flight was 6 in the morning, so in order to avoid risk of missing the flight, we decided to stay overnight in an airport hotel. And when we arrived there, you know, he was parking the car, and he said, if you could please book the room while I'm parking the car, then I'll come to the page. And I went to the reception, and The receptionist said, unfortunately, we don't have much choice for you. We can only offer you one spare room. And this is room 108. If you like, you can take it. I was laughing. I said, of course we take it because we know who booked this room for us. And this receptionist was very funny. He said, no one really booked this room. Anyway, we know what happened. So we could take that room. And when that devotee came, I told him, yes, what is the number of our room? He said, well, at least not 108. I said, yes, it is 108. And he said, well, that's amazing. That's really giving us. That's not funny anymore. He really makes these arrangements. And so when we have to Ukraine, and my first engagement upon arrival was to give a course on Bhagavad Gita for one group of people who are Slavic Aryans. These are ancient followers of ancient Vedic culture in Russia. They still perform fire sacrifices, and you know, they have their sadhana, they worship Vishnu, whom they call Vishen. That's very little difference. So anyhow, Vedic culture is still alive in Russia. In some parts of this, some people preserve it. You know, it's a little different from our practices. It's more similar to traditional Vedic practices in India. They worship all the demigods also, along with Vishnu. And they have same misconception, like many people in India have. They think that Krishna, you know, they believe in Krishna as well. They call him Krishan. But they believe that Krishan is an expansion of Vishnu, or avatar of Vishnu. So they can't understand that Krishna is a super god. Anyway, so I was supposed to teach them Bhagavad Gita, because they accept Bhagavad Gita as Vedic scriptures. And upon arrival, one of my friends who organized my program, he said, I booked a very good room for you. Here is your key. I looked at the key, and it was again 108, number 108. And I looked at him, I said, did you do it for purposely? He said, no, actually there were few devotees taking part in that festival. And he just grabbed a bunch of keys, you know, from the rooms to book. And then he was giving out these keys to different devotees without looking at the numbers. And so the number he gave me was 108. And I told him about 2 1-4-8s in the two previous nights in Italy. He was very surprised. You know, three nights in a row, and three rooms 108. So this was quite remarkable. Anyway, my last round the world before this one. I was going to Los Angeles, and there is one very old devotee, Vijay Prabhu. He's a Sankirtan minister in this one. And we were talking with him, and I was telling him about, you know, he came to my room and took darshan of Giriraj. And I was telling him different stories. And that, amongst other stories, I also told this story about three rooms 108. And he was saying, oh, this is interesting, okay, etc. And then he started his own round the world, you know, traveling around different countries and, you know, thinking of the solution of all this. And it was quite funny because we crossed paths with him, you know, our roots were, you know, almost the same. So we met, I think, 5 or 6 times during our travels in different parts of the world. And first meeting was in Fiji Island. And the devotees took us both to the retreat. They organized a retreat on one, you know, very exotic island. There are different islands in Fiji as well. And one of them is considered to be the best for the tourists and for, you know, retreats. They call it Garden Island. You know, it has, you know, original nature untouched by
humans in very beautiful place, but it's very much undeveloped. There is not even electricity in all the parts of the island. You know, half of the island is they just live on generators that produce electricity like that. So it's really, you know, like a life from any sort of this place. And we were going there on the ship, the big group of devotees, and devotees were talking about accommodation on that island, and they were saying that they will be all accommodated in one school, will be sleeping on the floor in sleeping bags. And when that devotee heard about that arrangement, and he is like a little bit elderly, he is nearly 60, and he said, well, I'm a little old for that, you know, to sleep on the floor in the sleeping bag. So I have to check with the organizers whether they make any separate arrangements for us. And so I also told him, you know, that I'm not so much worried about myself, but, you know, when there is a one big room for people, it's really hard to maintain proper big emotional standards for giving us. And so I would like something where at least I can, you know, keep cleanliness and everything back. Some separate facilities. So together we went to the organizers who were asking what the arrangement, and the organizer said, well, for you, because you are our guests, we will book a room in a hotel, and you're going to stay in a hotel room. And so we were more happy with that. And he said, I'll stay with you as well. And so upon arrival, this is like very tiny little place, and they all have only one hotel. And this hotel is also not like big multi-store hotel. It's like little bungalows, wooden bungalows. Maybe 10 or 15 bungalows. That's the whole, the entire hotel. And when we came, and the owner said, I'm sorry, but all the rooms are full at the moment. I can't help you. And there is no other hotel anywhere. So, and of course the only option was to go to the school and sleep on the floor. And I thought, okay, whatever, it's an arrangement, because I'm still younger, that's fine. But I saw that that devotee, Vijayaprabhu, he was really upset with that news. He was really sad. And we turned around and we started leaving the place. And then one man came up to the owner, who was a receptionist as well. And he told him something. And then the owner said, please wait for a minute, because that man, he has to leave immediately. He has some emergency. And he's vacating a room. You just pay for 10 or 15 minutes, we tidy it up, and you can occupy it. And I can give you a key right now. And so Vijayaprabhu, he was there first, he grabbed the key with his small hand, and then he looked at the number. It was room number 108. And you can't imagine what happened to him. He was jumping up and down and shouting, Giriraj, Giriraj. He made arrangements for it because, you know, he was so desperate and he already gave up hope, and then, you know, everything changed and we had room, plus it was room 108. And I was, you know, quite impressed by the fact that, you know, one thing, somebody hears this story, which happened somewhere with someone, and, you know, it's completely irrelevant to that person. Yeah, it's interesting, entertaining, but nothing special. But it's a completely different thing when somebody is in the story, taking part in it like that, then, you know, it's really impressing the person. So, and things like that, you know, like I have so many stories about Giriraj. He's always doing one pastime or the other. And in many cases, I noticed that he's fulfilling desires of all the devotees very quickly. And any kind of desires, I mean, with them, you can ask him for anything. And, you know, unless, you know, that main thing that somehow it helps you in your service, you can ask him for anything you want. Like that. And I saw many amazing instances how he's fulfilling different devotees' desires like that. So, and this is what it is. Krishna consciousness is experiential learning process. Once you start chanting Hare Krishna, things start happening to you, which actually help you to understand Krishna as a person and develop your relationship with him. And this is the beauty of this process. Therefore, Krishna consciousness, as it is explained in Srimad Bhagavatam, once started, can never be given up. Even devotee, due to some unfortunate circumstances or immaturity, may try to, you know, resume his life in the material world. There is no chance to forget Krishna and stop this relationship with Krishna, because it's so amazing, it's not possible to forget that experience. This is what Bhagavatam experience. And so, therefore, we are very fortunate. We are already saved many times, not only one time. And of course, now our only concern should be how to help others to get this wonderful opportunity to establish their relationship with Krishna. Hare Krishna, thank you very much. Namaskaram Bhagavatam ki jai, Prabhupada ki jai, O Premanande
Prabhu, Jai Hind Sri Krishna Shloka Prabhu ki
jai, Singapore Gaur Bhakta Vrinda ki jai.
Hare Krishna, you have Giriraj with you in Singapore?
So Devakinanda Prabhu is asking if that Giriraj is with me in Singapore. Yes, he's with me everywhere.
We have known, we would have asked you to, we would have requested you to bring him to me.
Yes. There is a possibility of
seeing him before you leave.
If anyone wants to see him, if anyone has any desires. Yes, please.